said. Ah? How come Dan's giving you the run of the place? You come and go around here as if you owned the joint. Al-Bashir smiled. I may not own the joint, as you put it, but I am the conduit through which the money flows. I suppose Dan trusts me because I have provided the financing that keeps this operation alive. You've been all over the place, Mohammed said, poking into everything. I'm fascinated by all this high technology. I'm eager to learn everything I can. Mohammed looked at him with disbelieving eyes. Then one of the technicians called from the line of consoles. We're ready for the instrument checkout. I'll leave you to your work, Al-Bashir said graciously, feeling almost relieved that Mohammed turned away from him and started striding across the hangar floor. Al-Bashir began walking away too, toward the open doors and the chilly, cloudy weather outside. As he hurried toward Hangar A, where Dan's office was, through the damp, cutting wind blowing in from the Gulf, he felt glad that Mohammed was not in charge of security for Astro Corporation. The man was suspicious, protective. Thank God Dan Randolph is so trusting, Al-Bashir said to himself. If Mohammed were in Dan's place, I'd never be able to get the information I need. By the time he reached Hangar A, Al-Bashir was actually shivering. Berating himself for wearing nothing warmer than a silk business suit, he blew into his hands as he climbed the stairs toward Dan's office. When he stepped into the outer office, April said from behind her desk,
Mr. Randolph isn't in this morning. He's gone to Houston.
Al-Bashir's nerves twitched. Houston?
To meet with Mr. Passot at the regional FAA office.
Ah, I see. Houston was also where the regional FBI office was located, Al-Bashir knew. The FAA was not troublesome.
They're working out clearances for the next test flight, said April.
Of course. April smiled uncertainly as Al-Bashir stood in front of her desk. She is truly lovely, he thought, picturing how she would look in an evening gown, in a bikini, in bed.
Is there anything I can do for you? She asked.
Al-Bashir pulled up the little wheeled chair from the corner of the cubicle. Many things, he said as he sat down.
I'm really kind of busy, mister.
Al-Bashir interrupted. I want you to come work for me, April.
For Tricontinental in Houston?
No, for me. As my personal assistant. You would travel the world with me. Private jets, the best hotels. She was clearly surprised, Al-Bashir saw. A woman of your education and abilities could go far in this world, very far, if you would allow me to help you. Her look of surprise faded.
I'm happy with the job I have, Mr. Al-Bashir.
Please call me Asim.
I'm happy with the job I have, she repeated.
I'll double your salary, and you would have all the perks you want. You could see the world in luxury. April smiled again.
I couldn't leave Mr. Randolph, especially with the power sat almost ready to be turned on. He depends on me.
I'd like to depend on you, Al-Bashir thought. Aloud, he replied, Well, will you at least consider my offer? She began to shake her head. Let's discuss it over dinner, he suggested. A knowing look came over April's face.
I'd be happy to have dinner with you, Mr. Asim, but purely on a social basis. I have no intention of leaving Astro Corporation.
Al-Bashir shrugged as if defeated. Very well, then. Purely a social dinner. Tonight? He saw her calculating in her mind.
I'm busy tonight. How about Friday?
Good, he said. Friday it will be. And he thought, you won't have to get up early on Saturday to go to the office. Washington, D.C. The cherry blossoms were out early this year. Through the long windows of the Senate hearing room, Dan could see the delicate pink blooms on the trees outside. It was springtime out there. Dan sat at the green baize-covered witness table while a battery of photographers blazed away at him, camera flashes flickering so rapidly it felt almost like being in a firefight. Dan felt tense, almost angry, as he looked at Jane, who was sitting at the end of the banquette before him. Things had been going well for the past 7 months, and this Senate hearing was the perfect place to make the announcement he was going to spring on them. Scanwell had rolled through the Super Tuesday primary so well that he was suddenly the front runner among the pack chasing after the nomination for president. And Jane was right there with him, every step of the way on the road to the White House. Dan wondered when they'd make a public announcement about their marriage. And there she is, sitting 20 feet away from me and avoiding looking my way. At least April's stuck by me, he said to himself. If al-Bashir actually did offer her a job with him, she must have turned it down. Neither one of them has mentioned it, though. The kid's done pretty damned well as my public relations director, too, he thought, as the photographers finally cleared away and the red after-images of their flashes began to fade. Even with those eco-nuts picketing around our main gate, we've had nothing but favorable publicity. Senator Quill wrapped a metal stylus against the wooden block on the banquette desktop, and the buzzing chatter slowly quieted. He called a hearing to order and introduced the 11 subcommittee members. Dan noticed that the bank of TV cameras off to one side of the room panned along the banquette, then pointed back at Quill. We are also honored to have Senator Thornton of the great state of Oklahoma with us this morning in an ex officio capacity. Jane nodded and smiled graciously as the cameras focused on her. Turning to the subcommittee's chief counsel, a dark-faced younger man with a thick black mustache and an even thicker mop of black hair falling down to his collar, Senator Quill said, "We're ready for the first witness." Dan rose to his feet as a clerk swore him in. Then he sat down again and faced the chief counsel, who was seated at the same level as Dan, at a small table facing him. Deadpanned, in a voice as inanimate as an automated elevator calling out floor numbers, he asked Dan to state his name and occupation. Daniel Hamilton Randolph, CEO and Board Chairman of Astro Manufacturing Corporation. If you have a prepared statement, the subcommittee will listen to it now. Dan leaned forward slightly toward the microphones arrayed before him. I have a statement, but I would prefer to wait until after I respond to the subcommittee's questions. The young lawyer looked startled for a moment and turned back to glance at Senator Quill seated above him. Dan kept a straight face, but he enjoyed that momentary look of consternation. Quill nodded, and Dan flicked a glance at Jane, down at the end of the table. She looked slightly nettled. The chief counsel began questioning Dan about the solar power satellite. Dan had already set up a video presentation, and for the next 10 minutes the computer graphics played their animated scenes on the big high-definition screen that hung on the wall of the hearing chamber opposite the TV crews. Once the video ended, the lawyer said, "This subcommittee has heard testimony to the effect that the microwave beam coming from the satellite to the ground is environmentally dangerous." Dan nodded. "Testimony from Rick Chatham and his people, I know. What is your response to their assertions?" "Are any of his assertions backed by scientific evidence?" Dan asked, with a patient smile on his face. "Does Chatham have any expertise in climatology or radiology or any other ology?" Dan heard a few titters behind him. "Can anyone in his group program a kitchen appliance without asking some teenager for help?" Laughter, even among some of the senators. But the lawyer frowned and repeated, "What is your response, sir, to these assertions?" Putting on a serious expression, Dan said, "Sir, we have done several scientific studies of the effects of beaming those microwaves through the atmosphere. I have provided the subcommittee with the relevant reports." Before the chief counsel could respond, Dan added, "The long and short of it is that we keep the beam so diffuse that birds can fly through it without harm. Cattle can graze on the ground where the antennas receive the microwave energy. We know the numbers, and we have added a safety factor of 100% specifically to make certain that there won't be any harmful effects." Senator Quill broke in, "Your animated video didn't show how you keep the beam so spread out." Wondering if Jane had prompted him to ask that question, Dan said, "Senator, the satellite's downlink antenna defocuses the beam. The system spreads the beam as it leaves the satellite. If that system should fail, the whole power satellite shuts down automatically." "I see," said Quill, although he looked slightly puzzled. The other senators began popping questions at Dan, each one of them eager to get their face on camera. Most of the questions were soft. "The subcommittee's on my side," Dan thought. Gradually, the questions drifted away from the environmental effects and began to center on the actual operation of the satellite and the spaceplane. You've had 2 flights of your spaceplane since the